The following program is a production of the Fairfax Network, Fairfax County Public Schools.
Welcome to Meet the Author. I'm your host, Emily Godfrey. Joining me in the studio today is author James Ponti, who has written and produced for television. But today, he is here to talk about his Framed book series and his Dead City trilogy. James, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, also joining us via Skype are students from Glasgow Middle School. Hello, Glasgow.
Hey, Glasgow.
Hi, guys.
Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Smart questions?
We're ready.
Awesome. We'll come back to you in a moment. So, James, I read that you wrote for kids' TV shows on the Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, and PBS. What made you decide to write for teenagers?
Well, I always enjoyed kids' writing. I loved kids' TV growing up. Nickelodeon, to me, was this ideal culture to be in. So I worked at Nickelodeon for a while. I worked at Disney Channel way back when, probably when you were growing up and watching. I wrote the Mickey Mouse Club back when Justin Timberlake and Ryan Gosling and Christina Aguilera were just 11-year-olds who would come and annoy me in my office. I should have been nicer to them looking back in retrospect instead of kicking them out all the time.
That's amazing.
But yeah, and then PBS doing cartoons like Clifford, Puppy Days, and things like that. And it was just always fun to write for kids, and writing kids' books just was a natural progression from that.
Was it a long process? Did it take a long time to write that first book?
The first book, you mean to get to the point to write it, or the actual process of writing it?
To get to the point of writing it.
It was not, because it came at an odd time. It was not a plan. It was not an expectation. I was a very poor reader growing up, and so what I thought would be that I would write television all the time, and that would be it. And at a certain point, an opportunity arose, and my wife hates that I tell the story, but it's the honest story. My wife's a high school teacher, and I always say that, you know, if you want support, marry an elementary school teacher. If you want honesty, marry a high school teacher. And so one night, my wife's falling asleep, and I said to her, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to write a novel. And my wife just looked at me and said, you should try to read one before you try to write one. And I said, yeah, but I don't have time. So, it was an idea one day, and 4 months later, I had a contract for my first book, and away we were going.
Wow. Well, our Glasgow students are eagerly awaiting.
And I am eagerly waiting to hear what they have to say.
To ask you some questions. Okay. So let's take a few. Who has the first question for Mr. Ponti?
My name's Abdel.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
What is your question?
How do you pick your characters?
How do I pick the characters? Well, with characters, what you want to do, my biggest goal is that whoever is reading the book sees in the characters either themselves or their friends or kids they know at school. So what I try to do is I try to think of realistic people, base it somewhat on kids that I know, base it somewhat on me and my friends when I was younger, and make sure that they have positive traits, negative traits. But when you're writing a mystery, you need to come up with an excuse for how come this person is solving a mystery. So with Florian in these books, what I did is his mom works at a museum, his dad is a museum security expert, and so what ends up happening is he gets sucked up into a museum mystery. So that's a reason for why it started.
Glasgow students, let's take another question.
Hello, my name is Ramsey, and my question is, how did you publish your first book?
I worked in television, and I had some time off, and I thought, I have 2 months without anything to do. That's when I decided I would try to write a book. And so I think if I knew how hard it was supposed to be to write a book, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have thought I could do it. But I just wrote 50 pages of a book, and I just mailed it in, and they said they wanted to publish it. And then later on, I find out it's totally the wrong way to do it. But that it worked out for me, and that was my first step into it. So it's not an exciting story. It's just, but all of us have different ways that we get into writing. And every author I know, and I'm really fortunate, I got to know a lot of young, middle grade and young adult authors. We all came at it backwards and through weird ways.
So Glasgow students, let's have one more question for Mr. Ponte right now.
Hi, my name is Kevin. My question is, how do you keep writing when you get stuck?
Oh, that is a very good question. How do you get writing when you get stuck? There's the term you'll hear a lot is writer's block. And I think what writer's block usually is, or what getting stuck usually is, not the lack of an idea. I think it's usually a lack of confidence in the idea that you have. Because in your mind, you think, oh, I need something really great. And then you read it, it's like, well, that's not really great. So as long as you don't write it down, you still might come up with something great, and that's what sticks you. I have a day job during the day, so I write at night. So one of the things that I always have done whenever I have trouble writing, it's probably in the middle of the night, it's like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., and a lot of times the way I'll do it is I will just go outside my house and I'll walk across the street and I'll look at my house and I'll say, okay, you obviously can do this. You have a place to live, you have a car, your family's happy, they're all being fed, so you know how to do this. But more importantly, everyone who's asleep in that house right now is counting on you not to get writer's block. And I just stay there for about a minute or so, and then I walk back, and I start writing. And then I do what everyone should do when they face writer's block, which is I write stuff even if it's not great, because nothing usually is great when you write it. That's very rare. It's always great when you rewrite it, and you have to have something on the paper to be able to rewrite it.
We talk a lot about that with our students, about how you have to get something down first, and that writing really comes in the editing and the revision.
Writing, it's rewriting, yeah, over and over again, absolutely.
Well, speaking about writing, I read Framed, and I loved it.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
That would make it awkward if you didn't, by the way, so thank goodness you liked it.
Well, what I really loved was all the references to places around D.C., like the Foggy Bottom Metro and the Hoover Building and the Art Museum. How do you know so much about D.C.?
I do tons of research for the books that I write. I like to travel, so I like to go to New York and Washington are my two favorite cities in the country. And so even though I live in Florida, I travel. So the first book series I wrote was set in New York. The second book series I wrote was set in Washington, D.C. And what I love about it is everything in Washington means something. The White House, the Smithsonian, the Library of Congress, they're all symbolic of these ideals that we have. So that's kind of a great setting to have a book, as opposed to if I just set it in Orlando where I live and it's like, oh, there's a bank. You know, here there's the Treasury Building. It's everything's bigger. Here's the public library. There's the Library of Congress. So I like that. And so I come here. I usually, when I'm working on a book, I'll try to go to the place like two or three times for each book. Sometimes it's really funny. When I was writing the Dead City books, they're set in New York, and they're about zombies and dead bodies. And I went with my son, and I want everything to be as realistic as possible. So there is this place on Roosevelt Island, which is right there in New York City, where a dead body is discovered. So I had my son lay on the ground like a dead body, and then I walked down the street to see how far away you would be to see the dead body.
So it's like real life.
So I was doing research, but what cracked me up is no one in New York cared that there was a body laying, and they just kept stepping around him or over him and all, and it's just really fun. So I try to go to all the places. I try to arrange special tours, so in Vanished.
Well, we have some photos.
That's right. I try to do research. And so when I'm doing a special, like each book in the Frame series takes place at an institution like the Library of Congress, the White House. Mm-hmm. So right here, there's a picture from Vanished. This is the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, and that's where the student disappears. That's the title for Vanished. And so I went and I did a tour. I did a tour of that. I went behind the scenes, and it was really great.
Well, often the research part of writing is very difficult for students. And it sounds like you really take a real life approach to trying to see the places and get a feel. Do you have any other tips about the research process for kids?
I like to go and walk because sometimes that gives me inspiration. It's amazing how good you can research online now. You go and people put up YouTube videos. So you want to find out, well, what's it like to walk? And I do that all the time. I'll go to YouTube or I'll go to Google Maps. Mm-hmm. So in Google Maps, like for instance, in Framed, they go to the Romanian embassy. And I went there and I took some pictures outside, but I forgot their walk to it. And they're walking from, I think, DuPont Circle to the embassy. So I just went to Google Maps, I got Street View, and I just walked down the street online to see how far it was, to see where there's a donut shop, to see where there's,
you know. Here it is.
And you can do it all. And so this is a picture of the Romanian embassy. And when I walk by, there's a scene set inside of it. the front door was open, so I thought maybe I can peek inside.
Yeah.
And I walked up and I started asking this man if I could come inside. He saw my camera and he just started yelling at me in Romanian. I thought I should probably leave here before I create an international incident. So I ran off and went and did research elsewhere.
But it gave you a lot of good inspiration for that scene.
Well, the scene is maybe not as nice to the Romanian embassy staff as if they had been nice to me, because you got to write what you know and you got to write what's real. Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed learning about the toast theory in France.
Okay.
Can you explain what toast means?
Sure. So toast is the key of these books. Toast stands for the theory of all small things. And it is a technique that Florian Bates is the main character. Florian has invented this as a survival skill. His family moves every couple of years, so he's constantly moving into a new school. And he's learned along the way that people are often one way in big grand motions, but in little ways they're deceitful. So he just looks at the little things to try to figure out who the bully might be or where the best place to get pizza might be. And so for him, it's a survival technique. But when he moves to Washington and he meets Margaret, the next door neighbor, a girl from down the street, they start realizing toast can be used for all kinds of stuff, and they play games with it. And it's about playing the games of looking at little details and trying to figure out mysteries that they stumble across a big mystery that involves the National Gallery of Art.
Well, we have a picture of Napoleon. Would you care to demonstrate, please?
Sure. So in this, what I was doing when I was writing the book, I researched at the National Gallery of Art, and I knew that at one scene, Florian was going to have to explain to Margaret how toast worked. And I took a tour, and the tour guide gave me the explanation. It was perfect. She showed me this picture. It's Napoleon in his office, and she showed us the picture and she said, "What time is it?" And we look at the clock and I think I can't see great from here, but I think on the clock it's 4:13. So we answer, "Oh, it's 4:13. And she says, "Right, it's 4:13. But is it 4:13 in the morning, a.m., or 4:13 in the afternoon, p.m.?
Oh.
And that became the challenge.
Yeah.
And then you notice the candle is lit. The candle is lit, it's the middle of the night, it's 4:13 a.m. And I realized it was the perfect explanation of toast, because you take two little things, the clock and the candle, and you put them together to get the bigger thing. And that's the whole concept of how toast works.
Well, do you use toast in your own life?
I use it. I do use it, but I use it for fun. So I travel a lot, and toast was invented at the airport. So I sit around and I wait for a flight, and you start looking at all the people who are waiting for the flight.
Yeah.
And you just, to pass the time, start trying to figure out, what can I tell about these people without talking to them? What can I tell just by looking at them? And I realize we give away a lot visually. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of look at people's faces and figure out who's related to who. And you can look at what they're carrying and maybe figure out where they're from. And all of a sudden you start painting a picture. And so that's where it came from. But I can't use it to solve mysteries. I can only use it to pass time at the airport. Kids always come up to me, they go, "Toast me, toast me." I'm like, I wish I was that good that I could just do that. So.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Sometimes I'll just make something up. Like a kid will say, "Toast me," and I'll look and I'll say, "You're the youngest of three children." And on the off chance that it's right, they're like, and they say, "How do you know that?" I said, "I can't tell you unless you work for the FBI." But I just totally make it up. There's no way to know that.
Well, do you have a question for James Ponte? Join the conversation. Jot down the information at the bottom of your screen. We welcome your calls and tweets. The character of Florian Bates might be a literary cousin to the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, and Alex Rider. These characters are just part of the ingredients for a flavorful mystery. We asked students from Twain Middle School to share their recipe for a good whodunit. Let's see what they have to say.
A mystery includes the scene of the crime.
A mystery includes suspects.
In a mystery, you find clues in the strangest of places.
A mystery includes an investigator.
In a mystery, there are red herrings, and those are fake clues.
In a mystery, secrets are revealed.
A mystery includes people who can't be trusted.
In a mystery, there's always a place to do research.
In a mystery plotline, something's always stolen.
I wish I had those twin kids with me when I was writing the first book, because they seemed to know more about it than I knew when I started. But that's a great list. That's a great list.
Well, what else would you include in a good mystery?
Well, there's a couple things that are maybe the second level on a mystery. So I think a mystery has to play fair. And by that, It's not, and I think Sherlock Holmes cheats, and that was the reason toast was important to me. Because Sherlock Holmes knows 294 types of tobacco. Well, no one knows that. So I wanted Florian and Margaret to only use a skill that anyone could practice and develop. So that's one thing. But all the clues have to be visible in the book. There has to be a way that the reader has a chance to solve it, because the whole fun of reading a mystery is it's interactive. You're trying to solve it alongside. So playing fair is one rule. I think mysteries should have an aha moment. And in my books, what I tend to do is the aha moment comes at the end of the first chapter. You go and you build to this, and Florian has this great, ah, that's what it is. And I want to do that so kids reading it, or adults reading it, know that, okay, the key is about something to do with this. And then you go back in time and you build back to it, and that way they know what they're looking for. Again, that's part of playing fair. And then the other part, someone mentioned red herrings. Said red herrings are important, but the other thing you need to do is anything that's a real clue, you need to have the opposite of a red herring, which is you need to pay it off in a fake way so people stop thinking of it as a clue.
So
make it more surprising, because otherwise it's the one thing you haven't mentioned. So if it's important that she's left-handed, you have something else happen that requires someone to be left-handed, and that way they think, oh, that's why she's left-handed, and they mark it into a different line in their head.
Well, let's get back to our Glasgow students and take some more of their questions. Glasgow, go ahead. We're ready for you.
Hi, my name's Hashar, and what made you write this, the book Framed?
When I was growing up, I was not a good reader. And so I wanted to write a book that I would have wanted to read. And that's really, I think a lot of my friends who are writers, that's what they'll say. Stuart Gibbs, I think, says something pretty similar to that. I want to write books that would interest me, and that makes me more interested in writing them. And I love mysteries. I love mystery books. I love mystery shows and movies. And so it just seemed natural to want to do a mystery.
Glasgow, may we have another question?
What are you going to write next?
I have a new series that debuts next year called City Spies. And City Spies is about this British spy who does missions all over the world. And when he does, he finds kids who have been marginalized. Maybe they're homeless, maybe they're in foster care, maybe they're orphaned. And he rescues them and adopts them. And they live in a castle on the coast of Scotland, and he trains them to be spies. So they become British intelligence's secret weapon, this team of five kids who are super spies.
And Glasgow, do you have one more question?
One more. I'm excited.
Did you visit the Library of Congress, and what did you see?
I did. For Trapped is set in the Library of Congress, and it is a wonderful place. I recommend, a lot of people I don't think go to the Library of Congress because they don't think it's for them. It's for everyone, and the treasures there are great. The young reader's room, young person's reading room is amazing. They have all kinds of great books there and great activities. And I arranged through them to take a tour. And I thought I was just going to get to go and see, I wanted to see the rare books reading room, which you see on the screen right now. And I wanted to see the tunnels that are beneath the Library of Congress, because that's key to the setting. But what ended up happening is the head of the rare books reading room gave me a tour of treasures of the Library of Congress. My wife was with me, and she's an American history teacher, and it was amazing. We saw the Thomas Jefferson's copy of the Federalist Papers, Abraham Lincoln's Bible, all these things to kind of give us an insight as to the types of treasures that are there so that it could help me in writing it to make it realistic. That's Abraham Lincoln's Bible right there. And it was really exciting. And I think it's a great place to set a mystery because, again, a library is something we're all familiar with. Getting trapped underneath the library is kind of terrifying.
So we have a few more questions from Glasgow.
Okay.
Glasgow, would you like to ask another question to Mr. Ponte?
Hi, my name is Antonio. If I published a book, what should I do so people can read it?
If you published a book, that's a hard question. I don't know how to get people to read it is something that's still elusive to me. I don't know how people decide, I want to do this one, I want to do that. I know sometimes I'll do it by recommendation. I know sometimes that I'll do it by just the cover, even though they say you don't judge a book by a cover. We all kind of do.
We all do that, yeah.
But mostly what you do is you just need to tell people. So social media is now a big thing that authors use. I have a website, jamesponte.com, and I'll talk about the books there. And hopefully the people will find you. And then if they read one of your books and they like it, then maybe they'll read others. But if you write a book and get it published, send me an email and I'll read it. And then that's one, and I'll tell everyone else to read it. So that'd be great.
So Glasgow, we have time for another question.
Hi, my name is Nelson, and what was the first book that you wrote?
The first book, that's a harder question than you think it would be, because I wrote a book based on the show that I wrote at Nickelodeon, but since that wasn't a fully created from scratch thing, I don't always count that. The first book I count is Dead City, and that was 6 years ago. 6 years ago this week that came out, yeah.
Well, thank you, Glasgow.
Thank you, Glasgow.
Those were wonderful questions. If time permits, we might come back to you later. So James, could you tell me, were you a reader growing up?
I was the opposite of a reader. So I was so slow at it that I was embarrassed by it. So I will tell people sometimes we had this, in my first grade class, we had this poster on the wall, had everyone's name on the poster. And every time you read something, you got a star and you go and you put it by your name. And by the end of the year, some of the kids, their lines looked like, you know, the Hubble telescope took a picture of a galaxy and there's just stars everywhere. And my line looked like the flag of Texas, the Lone Star State. There was just one star. I remember even as a kid putting it in the middle of the line so kids would think my other ones had fallen off, and that way I wouldn't be as embarrassed that I'd only read one thing. And it was so discouraging that I stopped trying to read, and I didn't really try to read for years and years. And so I fell behind. A couple books fell through the cracks, though, which were vital. So one of them was from the Mixed Up Files of Miss Baisley Frankweiler. It is my favorite book of all time, even more favorite than the books that I wrote, even more favorite than the books that my friends wrote. It is about a girl who runs away from home and with her brother, and they live inside the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and they sneak around at night. And I remember thinking, that's a real place, and that's such an exciting adventure. And I'm sure that's what always made me want to write about a museum, which inframed the museum as a real key part, yeah.
Well, do you have any tips for how students can improve their own writing?
Sure. There's a lot of ways to improve your writing. So some of the things I'll tell you about writing is, first of all, when you write, just write things that matter to you. Write about things that matter to you. So if you really care about Legos, write a Lego story.
I know some kids who would totally be
If you really
that.
Care about animals, write an animal story. And sometimes people think, well, I need to write something important. So they'll leave the things that matter to them, and then the book won't matter as much, or the story won't matter as much. The second thing I would say is, write the way that you talk. I think people try to think, well, I'm going to use formal words and get out of the dictionary and try to use the longest, best descriptions. But that's not the way we read. We read the way we talk. So write the way you talk. And then the final thing I would say is, when you write, read it out loud. And hearing your writing out loud is the best technique to make sure it flows, to make sure it sounds right. So that's three starters. And obviously, when your teachers or people tell you you need to rewrite it, they're not just being mean. You really need to keep rewriting and rewriting. And it's great. It's a great thing to do. One of the best things about writing is anyone can do it. Doesn't cost money, doesn't need special equipment, because everyone has a story to tell and everyone has a unique voice. So the story that you would tell, you're the only one that can tell it. So you have to be the one to write it.
I think a lot of people get hung up on that and they don't remember that their voice is unique.
It's great, it's really important. And I think we live in a great time now. I think I might have been a better reader growing up if we had the kind of selection that we have right now. Mm-hmm. So I love it if you read my books and you like my books. But I don't need you to read my books. I just want you to read some books. You know, Laurie Holt Sanders is this great author. And Laurie told me one time, she says, James, we're not competitors, we're co-conspirators. All we're trying to do is get kids to read. And if together we can get kids to read, it doesn't matter what they read, there's plenty of kids to go around. And I really believe in that philosophy.
I feel like as a librarian, can I also say that I'm a co-conspirator with you?
Yeah, you absolutely are. And so are teachers, and so are parents, and so are other kids. And this is really what is important. You know, don't be shy about recommending books to your friends. And don't be shy about, oh, well, that's a graphic novel, that's not a real book. Of course it's a real book. Reading in stories are reading in stories. And you know, graphic novel is another interesting way to tell a story that is special to that creator. So there's so many avenues out there.
So we have time for one more question from
One more
Glasgow.
Question, can't wait.
So Glasgow, what is your question?
Hello, my name is Ramsey. Will you write another framed novel?
I hope to get to write another framed novel. Books are kind of, series are kind of weird in that you kind of see you have to see how popular it is. Does it keeping interest? And then the publisher decides that they want more. But also, I'm already committed to the next two books that I'm writing. So if I write another framed novel, I'll have to sneak it in sometime next year. But I'm part of an anthology along with Chris Grabenstein and Stuart Gibbs and a bunch of other mystery writers, and we're all writing short mysteries, and that's going to come out either next year or the beginning of the year after that. And that's going to be Florian and Margaret in that. So there's still plenty of Florian and Margaret left to come.
Well, thank you, Glasgow. It's been wonderful to have you
awesome.
On the show. So, James, could you tell us a little bit about your Dead City trilogy?
So Dead City is about a 12-year-old girl named Molly Bigelow. And Molly goes to a science magnet school called MIST, which stands for the Metropolitan Institute of Science and Technology, and it is in New York City. And when she gets there, she's recruited to the secret society called the Omegas, who police the undead that live beneath New York City. And she has no idea, but she has been trained her whole life for this role. And she and the idea behind the mystery, it's a mystery, it's an action-adventure story. Really what I wanted to write about wasn't zombies, which don't really interest me so much, but the idea that growing up you want to know who's real and who's fake. And in this instance, there are real and fake people, because my zombies don't look like the zombies in movies. They look like everyone else. And you have to protect the good ones, and you have to take control of the bad ones. And so that's what that trilogy is about. And it was really fun to write. And I was very fortunate that some states like Texas and Florida put it on their state reading list. The librarians there got behind it, and all of a sudden people started finding it, and that made possible Framed and the other books that I'm writing now.
Is the character of Molly Bigelow based on anyone you know?
Molly Bigelow is based on so many girls that I've gotten a chance to meet. So Molly, the whole idea behind Molly is she is this 12-year-old girl who sees herself as the invisible girl in the back of a classroom that no one's going to notice. And she doesn't know that inside of her is this amazing superhero of a character. And not a superhero with a magic power like in the Marvel Universe, but a superhero in like this brave, smart, daring girl. And she uncovers that. And I meet girls like that all the time. And I just wanted to write a character that made sense to them, that they could relate to.
Can you give us the inside scoop? What are you working on now?
So I slipped up a little bit. I told that a little bit earlier. So I'm working right now on City Spies. City Spies is the new series, and I'm very excited about that. And that'll debut fall of next year, 2019. And it's these five kids who are part of the secret team for MI6, British Intelligence. And there's a kid from the U.S., and a kid from Brazil, and a kid from Australia, a kid from Africa, and a kid from Asia. So we have kids from all over the world. And what they've never had before, and what they find for the first time here, is a family. And they become each other's family. And it's full of adventure, and it's full of action, and full of mystery as well. It's really been fun to write. I'm just finishing the first book, actually. I finished the rewrite this morning before I came in.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. And thank you to Glasgow and the kids who sent in questions and Twain. And it's just really, it's really great to be here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you, Glasgow. It's been wonderful to have you join us today.
Bye.
If you would like to learn more about James Ponti, please visit his website. If you'd like to learn more about the Fairfax Network or the show, please visit our website.
Go ahead and visit both.
To learn more about our upcoming programs, please visit the Fairfax Network. For the Fairfax Network, I'm Emily Godfrey. Keep reading, keep writing, and keep dreaming. Thanks for watching.